This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. On this national holiday honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., it seems that in the last few months, more hitherto unheard speeches or interviews from Dr. King are coming to light. The latest one in New York State. A college intern discovered a reel-to-reel tape of a 1962 speech by Dr. King delivered in New York City at a dinner celebrating the centennial of the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation. That tape has now been released by the New York State Museum. Mark Schamming is the director of the New York State Museum. He joins us now. Mr. Schamming, welcome. Good to have you.
Yes, great to be here.
There is a Georgia connection to all of this, isn't there? Dr. King was invited to speak at this event in New York and initially said, no, I've got a schedule conflict. So there was a Georgia connection in even getting him there, wasn't there?
Yes, that's correct. Nelson Rockefeller seems to have wooed him.
And Nelson Rockefeller was the governor of New York at that time, right?
Yes, Governor Rockefeller, who had greater aspirations, as we now know. And in fact, one of the things that he did to encourage Martin Luther King Jr. to come speak at the Centennial Commission event was Rockefeller personally donated money to repair some churches that had been burned in the South. And it seems that King at the time was carefully weighing his allegiance to President John F. Kennedy at the time and what it meant to come to New York to speak in the presence of a Republican governor, but it was for the best, and he gave this a great speech on that day.
And among the things he talked about was the fact that the Emancipation Proclamation was, in his mind, linked with the Declaration of Independence as sort of the legacies of this experiment that we call America.
Yes. In fact, he starts out in really the first minute or so of the speech talking about the fact that if there were just two documents, being the Declaration of Independence and the Emancipation Proclamation, we would still be a whole nation, and the importance of those two documents. It's really a moving passage. And I tell you, it's one thing to read the words, which we had before. We had a typed version of this speech in the state archives. This is the first time we've heard his voice. It's incredible to hear him say these words in the cadence that he speaks.
Let me get to that, because a little later in the speech, he delivers a passage among several that could have been delivered today. And this is one where he talks about the emerging new nations in Africa. He had been to Africa back in 1960, I believe, and had visited some of those new countries. And he had talked about their development. And then he contrasted it with the, at the time, almost no progress in the South on civil rights. And here's what he had to say.
The simple fact is that the relative progress in undeveloped sectors of the world in human rights races at jet-like speed, while we strain in a horse and buggy for advancement. We are not moving in the world tempo of change. Worse still, as Earth shrinks through communication revolutions, and the shame of Little Rock, Arkansas, and Albany, Georgia flashes around the globe, the world is becoming more aware of our deficiencies. Floods of consumer goods, superhighways, supermarket, and Telstars do not obscure the existence of racial injustice. And this fact, more than any other, explains why more emerging nations move away from us than toward us. The touchstone is not the sophistication of our industrial devices, but our commitment to freedom and equality. Without faith that we are wedded to these truths, our power and strength become a menace to other peoples, and they will maintain that distance until we have justified their confidence.
As you listened to that passage and some others in particular, were you struck again about how contemporary they are?
It's incredible how contemporary the speech is, because just as in 1962, today there's still the unfulfilled promises of the Emancipation Proclamation, of the Civil Rights Movement. So it really is an incredible touchstone to reflect on the words then and what they mean today.
Certainly, we know how effective many of his speeches were in the years since. course, the speech, the Eye of a Dream speech, and the Mountaintop speech right before he was assassinated. Do we know whether this one had any measurable impact beyond the immediate audience?
Well, you know, there was a lot of press in the day, and it was Rockefeller had a number of civic leaders, and there was a press surge that happened around this. Rockefeller was going around New York State with the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation, in fact, in his briefcase, and the New York State Civil War Commission, the Centennial Commission, was talking about emancipation as a theme. So this was really centered on these topics. So yeah, we see a lot of press. We have in our archives a lot of material. Of course, it's the first time we're hearing the speech, so it's great to pair the press and the contemporary things of the day of 1962 with today as we listen to this very dynamic speech.
As you listen to the speech, this was 1962, so he was starting to become a national figure and one to which a lot of attention was being paid in the media, but it was before the I Have a Dream speech. It was, of course, before the Mountaintop speech in Memphis. As you listen to it, can you see any of these themes developing, any of the oratory developing?
Exactly. As you listen to the speech, and our commissioner, John King, Dr. John King Jr., who's a State Education Department commissioner now, was talking with us and analyzing the speech, and there's a lot of very similar passages that you hear developing that you hear later in the I Have a Dream speech. So it's a really beautiful and interesting lineage that one sees listening to one speech and seeing what he says, you know, some months later as the next very important year happens in his life.
One other thing you notice, and I saw it when I looked at the transcript of the speech, it appeared that he did quite a bit of editing right before he delivered it. Some things that are written aren't delivered. There are other things that weren't written that are added.
Yeah, it's really instructive to look at the typed speech, and you see the notes, and you can see whole passages that he skips or he drops a word in. And it makes sense, and it's really sort of instructive when you think about how someone of his brilliance comes up with an idea and a message he wants to give in a speech and how he actually delivers it. So just reading the typed speech and listening to him is an experience in itself. And also, you know, the very, very different thing of reading a speech, the cadence of his voice starts out very deliberate, concentrating on every word, and by the middle of the speech, he's in a much more dynamic voice and brings you to the end of the speech where he quotes a slave at the very end in this beautiful passage.
So I close by quoting the words of an old Negro slave preacher who didn't quite have his grammar right, but uttered words of great symbolic profundity. They were uttered in the form of a prayer. Lord, we ain't what we ought to be. We ain't what we want to be. We ain't what we gonna be, but thank God, we ain't what we was.
He sounds also as if he's trying to walk that fine line between really challenging his audience and getting them out of their comfort zone without losing them.
Yes. And, you know, it's not just when you read the speech and listen to it, it's not simply a feel-good speech or an inspirational one. He's really critiquing the government and the state of the world and civil rights. I mean, he really gets into some demanding language, I think, at the time that's pretty strong. We feel it's a very important speech.
So how is the recording of the entire speech, which is about just over 25 minutes long, how is that being made available?
Well, the speech is, I think, just a little more, 26 minutes. And there's like a 45-second silence in the middle because the gentleman who was a New York State radio host turned the tape over with the old reel-to-reel. You had to flip the tape to keep it going.
I'm familiar with that, yes.
It's available on the New York State Museum website, the entire speech. There's also a three-minute version of it. You can hear Commissioner John King with the New York State Education Department, which is, by the way, the New York State Museum is part of the State Education Department, talking about the importance of the speech. And I would recommend you listen to that as well. It's a brilliant introduction and interpretation of the speech. And there's a lot of fuller material about a lot of supporting documents that explain more in more depth about how New York State came to have a copy of the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation, about that very important program today and the context that the speech was made. It's just very important to get the whole historical context of what happened on September 12, 1962.
Mark Shamming is the director of the State Museum of New York, which has just released a 26 or so minute speech by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the tape of which has never been heard before, although the transcript had existed before. Mr. Shamming, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thanks. It was great talking with you.